Thank you, Blessing and Chonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, August 26th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Sithandekile Mhlanga.
Among our top stories this evening,
critics say Central Bank Governor John Manguja's monetary statement alone will not revive the country's economy. They want Harare to put in place consistent policies that will attract investment.
History is not good for us. The history is that the authorities in Harare are corrupt. They have mismanaged the economy over the years. Lawlessness, they changed the rules in their favor.
Zimbabwe and China reportedly signed 9 deals that will see the Asian country providing financial support for Harare's economic turnaround strategy, the Zimbabwe Agenda for Sustainable Socio-Economic Transformation, or ZIM Asset.
The country has to find out another economic opportunity from other countries, say from Asia. And considering Zimbabwe has been suffering from economic stagnation, China is giving the country a great opportunity.
And the Secretary General of the Zimbabwe Medical Association, Dr. Douglas Kwatiso, says Zimbabwe's healthcare professionals are well equipped to deal with the deadly Ebola virus should an outbreak occur in the country.
A day after Central Bank Chief John Manguja delivered his maiden monetary policy statement, there's been a lukewarm response from business, labor, and economists, with many agreeing that his statement alone is not enough to stimulate economic growth in the country. The country's economy, long mired in recession, is underperforming in almost every sector since President Robert Mugabe won a disputed election last year. The ruling ZANU-PF party blames the country's economic problem on European and American sanctions, but Mr. Mugabe's critics blame it on corruption and inconsistent economic policies. Manguja, in his policy statement under the theme Back to Basics, Setting the Tone for Zimbabwe's Economic Recovery, admitted that foreign investment in Zimbabwe more than halved in the first 6 months of the year, with the country attracting a paltry $67 million compared to $165 million during the same period last year.
The central bank chief said the economic ills were caused by a number of factors, which include tight liquidity conditions, company closures, rising formal unemployment, low production levels, non-performing loans, and a disproportionate trade balance. Manguja, who became central bank governor in May, taking over from Gideon Gono, urged the government to make its indigenization policy clearer by issuing guidelines for investors. According to Zimbabwe's indigenization law, black Zimbabweans must own 51% of shares of foreign companies. The law is blamed by many economists for causing investor flight. Manguja tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that despite all economic indicators pointing south, he is confident that the country can turn around its fortunes.
We need to work on the production side of the economy. And I'm saying that we go back to basics, which is the basic principle of economics, of supply and demand, and that we need to go into the basic aspects of promoting investment in the country so that we'll be able to increase production, without which, we know that locally we can't do it by ourselves. So we need to combine a combination of the foreign investment and also domestic investment so that we can improve on our production. And then by so doing, it means once you increase production, then you also increase employment, eventually also increase exports, and you also increase the goods and services which will be supplied to the market. That's, and therefore, we're now therefore looking at the constraints which we're facing in currently, which will then make them to be our bedrock of a monetary policy statement.
You also talked about the Zimbabwe Asset Management Company, or ZAMCO. How is this going to work?
Mm-hmm. No, that ZAMCO, basically that is an SPV for the purchasing of the 90% loans from banks. It works like any other country. No, this one is open invasion. throughout the whole world. If you go through, as you put in the Malian Prophet, we've given examples there, all other countries that have gone through what we are going through, they've increased in SPV to take into account of the non-performing loans. Well, therefore, they bought it commercial terms, and then they look for investors who are able to invest in those assets. And then by so doing, the investors bring liquidity to the economy.
Lastly, your overall outlook about the economy. Are you confident that there can be an economic turnaround?
I was born optimistic myself, and there is no reason why I should be pessimistic. I'm very positive about the future of the economy. And in terms of going forward, the outlook is good. We are kind of working to ensure that whatever we promise to deliver, we deliver.
That was Central Bank Chief John Mangujia speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
The president of the Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries, Charles Msipa, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that without a currency of its own, the country's central bank chief has no room to maneuver.
Both, I think, the right measures that should, you know, given the limited room that he had, that can, you know, at least, you know, address some of the issues in our financial sector.
He also talked about Zimbabwe's outlook out there, saying there is need to improve the country's image. What is your take on that?
Right, you know, just even from my travels outside the country, there is a big need to address the image of our country. There are lots of perceptions about our country, some of which are grounded, you know, in reality in our actions, some of which are not, that we all need to correct as government, as private sector, as civil society organizations. I think in some ways, Zimbabwe has been demonized in many ways, and we have also acted in ways that have generated very negative and adverse media coverage that has generated a stereotype about Zimbabwe and a perception about the country risk profile, which is affecting and hurts even those of us who are in business in this country.
That was the president of the Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries, Charles Msipa, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
ZCTU Secretary General Japhet Moyo concurs, saying Mangujia's task is inevitable as government policies are inconsistent.
History is not good for us. The history is that the authorities in Harare are corrupt. They have mismanaged the economy over the years. Very inconsistent, lawlessness. They changed the rules in their favor. People have lost their investment over the years, overnight. So no one is going to put money in such a country. So you need to build that confidence. And you don't just build it by merely announcing. You show that you have now adopted a friendly business culture. It will take time for people to accept that. If you still maintain pieces of legislation like the indigenization, I think people believe it's very difficult to put your resources where you have to surrender 51% to people without anyone paying for that. So we have not shown any eagerness to convince the international community that we are now a business-oriented nation.
That was ZCTU Secretary General Japhet Moyo speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Zimbabwe and China yesterday reportedly signed 9 deals that the state media is describing as landmark agreements that will see China providing financial support for Harare's economic turnaround strategy, the Zimbabwe Agenda for Sustainable Socio-Economic Transformation, or ZIM Asset. The money will fund the critical sectors that include energy, roads and the national railway network, telecommunications, agriculture and tourism as part of ZIM Asset. The cash-strapped Harare has been keen to revive revive the ailing economy but has struggled to raise the much-needed funds. President Robert Mugabe, who's in China with a government delegation, signed the agreements yesterday with his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping yesterday. Today, Mr. Mugabe met with Chinese Prime Minister Li Keqiang and the chairman of the Standing Committee of the National People's Congress, Zhang Dejing. From Johannesburg, the VOA's Anita Powell looks at President Mugabe's visit following his snub earlier this month by President Barack Obama when he did not invite him to his U.S.-Africa summit. Harare is reportedly looking for more than $4 billion from China to help revive the economy.
It is significant in the sense that, okay, you know, the country is currently going through a liquidity crunch. One, two, lack of foreign direct investment, or limited, very limited, let me say, very limited foreign direct investment. And three, the economy is currently, you know, in bad shape on the ground. So it is very important. Okay, it's a very important visit, and we hope and trust that it's going to be, you know, a worthwhile, fruitful visit.
But there are also concerns that Mr. Mugabe is accompanied by only cabinet officials, minus business people.
It has always been our weakness as Zimbabwe. We don't work together as a team. We talk of Team Zimbabwe, but on the ground there is no Team Zimbabwe. And they've really appreciated and, you know, expected, you know, the leadership at the top to walk the talk, and especially when they are going for business visits like that, to go with business people. If the Chinese leaders are coming here, they come with their business people to come and discuss, negotiate, and conclude whatever deals they want to conclude with us. And that's what South Africa does, and that's what a lot of countries do. And I don't know why that strategy continues to elude us. It will only strengthen, you know, our team, strengthen our case, and make sure that at the end of the day, we are all singing from the same hymn sheet, and we are then able to work together as a team.
Thank you. Now we bring you Anita Powell looking at President Robert Mugabe's visit. That was RBZ Chief Mr. Mangujiga speaking there earlier with Blessing Zulu about his monetary statement yesterday.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe has long been known for his fiery, combative, anti-Western rhetoric. And so, as he ventured east this week for a five-day state visit to China, the host government greeted him with a 21-gun salute. Members of Mr. Mugabe's delegation on Monday signed a bevy of agreements with Chinese officials, though the details of the agreements were not released. It's an increasingly rare welcome for a leader who has fewer and fewer places to turn. He and many members of his inner circle face strict sanctions and travel bans from the West for years of alleged election rigging and human rights abuses. Earlier this year, First Lady Grace Mugabe was denied a visa for a trip to the EU, and earlier this month, U.S. President Barack Obama pointedly left Mr. Mugabe off the guest list for a summit of African leaders. Yeju Kim is a research analyst at the Center for Chinese Studies at Stellenbosch University in South Africa. She says the Zimbabwe-China friendship isn't new. Mr. Mugabe sought support from China during Zimbabwe's independence struggle in the late 1970s.
Actually, this is not the first time for Mugabe to visit China. As we all know, Zimbabwe was not invited to attend the U.S.-African summit this year, I mean August. So even before, like, the U.S. and the EU imposed sanctions against Mugabe, so he adopted a look-east policy.
But Mr. Mugabe needs more than friendship. Zimbabwe's economy is once again in turmoil, with widespread power outages and reports of companies being forced to close or stop paying employees. Zimbabwean media have reported that Mr. Mugabe is asking Chinese leaders for $4 billion. Mr. Mugabe's spokesman did not answer repeated calls seeking comment on the reports. Kim says that the two nations have long had financial ties, with a number of Chinese mining and construction firms already working in Zimbabwe.
The country has to find out another economic opportunity from other countries, let's say from Asia. And considering Zimbabwe has been suffering from economic stagnation, China is giving the country a great opportunity. That's why Mugabe has to visit China, actually.
But she says if Zimbabwe gets the money it seeks, there will be a price. Zimbabwe is rich in natural resources like minerals, timber, and metals, making it a potentially lucrative investment for China. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
President Marcelino Chikasha of the newly formed African Democratic Party, or ADP, says Zimbabweans deserve the pain and suffering they are going through under President Robert Mugabe's ZANU-PF party, suggesting divisions within the opposition ranks and related issues have left one party to run the country as it wishes. As Ivan Chifera reports, Chikasha, whose party was unveiled in April, says she's ready to rescue Zimbabwe.
Chikasha told a media briefing today that Zimbabweans in general are fearful of the unknown and as a result have failed to remove President Robert Mugabe and his ZANU-PF from office. She charged the country's citizens have collectively allowed corrupt, selfish and greedy individuals in ZANU-PF to run the country. Chikasha said other Zimbabweans who could be doing more to help fight for democratic governance in the country were selfish, preferring to guard against losing what they've accumulated in wealth over the years. This group, she said, plays it safe by singing praises for people they know are destroying the country.
And yet some of us were selfish and two-faced, praising the wrong things if it afforded us opportunities and enabled us to survive. We somehow became these people that could brush off the beating or killing of another Zimbabwean, a brother or sister, in the name of politics. How did our hearts become so hardened? How did we stop caring? When did we lose ourselves?
She said the ADP, formed in April this year, aims to create a functional and prosperous nation through a strategy that she says will see Zimbabwe's developmental status improving drastically in 15 years. She said this can only be achieved through love and unity amongst Zimbabweans, adding, where there is peace, there is progress. Chikasha commended MDC leader and former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai for his efforts in fighting for democracy in the country, adding a party will complement his efforts.
Well, the main opposition leader in Zimbabwe, and that is Dr. Morgan Tsvangirai, and I would say that he has also fought a great battle for all Zimbabweans on that road to democracy. So there is a process that he started, and we are taking over that process and hopefully seeing it to completion. So we are in transition. I would not say we were in transition from 1980 because we were not, but we are now in transition with the advent of the MDC and Dr. Morgan Tsvangirai's inroads into creating a democratic society in Zimbabwe.
She said the ADP aims, among other things, to restore the rule of law and human rights and to define an identity, she says, will help unite Zimbabweans from all regions, races and tribes. Chikasha said, though not ready to participate in any by-elections taking place now, the party will contest the 2018 elections with her as the ADP's presidential candidate. Meanwhile, Parliament resumed sitting after a two-week break, with lawmakers lamenting inconsistent policy pronouncements by the Primary and Secondary Education Ministry regarding requirements for entry to teacher training, extra lessons, and entrance examination fees. Mbizo lawmaker Settlement Chikwinya said confusion in the ministry calls for a national stakeholder summit to deal with issues affecting the education sector.
While this debate degenerates into regression of political parties or members from their political parties, and then we tend to dig in, Mr. Speaker, this is education for our children. We need to put up a sober mindset. What is good for our children? And I believe dialogue will give us the solution. The minister must actually visit each and every district or each and every province, and dialogue with students, dialogue with teachers, dialogue with teachers' unions, dialogue with parents. You will come up with a solution which actually addresses our education system.
Chikwinya received overwhelming support from colleagues across the political divide, with the majority saying cabinet ministers were indifferent to the plight of pupils in public schools as their own children attended private schools locally and abroad. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Marcelina Chikasha is 41 years old and she's an accountant. She went to Dominican convent schools in Bulawayo and Harare before doing her articles with Ernst & Young. She then worked as an accountant and finance manager with various firms before taking up philanthropic work. She was married for 11 years and has two sons aged 16 and 18. She currently is divorced.
Now a look at regional and international news.
A slain black American teenager, Michael Brown Jr., was laid to rest in Ferguson, Missouri yesterday, and civil rights activist leader Reverend Al Sharpton, speaking at the funeral service, called for a change in policing in the United States after Brown's fatal shooting by a white police officer.
Senior U.S. officials say Egypt and the United Arab Emirates have launched airstrikes against Islamic militants in the Libyan capital twice in the past week. U.S. officials told reporters that the move caught the United States by surprise, potentially dealing a blow to relations between Washington, Cairo, and the Emirates.
And the presidents of Russia and Ukraine are meeting in Belarus on the fighting that has engulfed Ukraine's separatist east. At the start of the meeting, Ukraine's Petro Poroshenko said the fate of my country and Europe is being decided here in Minsk today. Hours before the meeting with Russia's Vladimir Putin, Ukraine released a video of Russian soldiers captured in its territory.
It's almost a month now after some 500 exceptional African youths completed their studies under the coveted Young African Leaders Initiative, now known as the Mandela Washington Fellowship. But a select few, including five Zimbabweans, remain on internship with leading United States enterprises to refine their occupational acumen and leadership prowess. Reporter Ntungamili Nkomo has more.
The Mandela Washington Fellowship took them to some of America's most prestigious universities, where they received training mainly in business leadership and public management. And now they are capping their initial six-week journey with 2 months of placement in Washington and elsewhere. Technologist and co-founder of Hypercube Hub, Irene Chikumbo, is interning with the U.S. African Development Foundation, a federal agency that supports community development in Africa. Chikumbo works in the department that handles financing for viable but disadvantaged businesses. She's been on the job for 4 weeks. So, what's the one most important thing that she has learned so far?
There's been a number of learnings, mainly around the sector of development and what models actually work. So in this case, they are empowering the communities. Because usually what, my understanding of what some of the development organizations do is they come and they give food aid and various other aid. But in this case, this organization is giving grants to already existing businesses or co-ops in different communities and giving them training and skills to make sure that their business becomes sustainable. So that's a very big lesson on my part about how we can economically empower different communities.
An expert in information and communications technology, Chikumbo explains how she hopes to channel her gained experience towards social development in Zimbabwe.
And one of my main goals is for ICT to help with development, so getting a broader understanding of what development work actually entails. So that's one aspect. And in the future, I do hope to be more involved in the social development of our country. So again, it's giving me context and understanding about what are the needs of some of these communities and what is actually working, what are some of the good practices that we can adopt as a country.
Another intern, Abigail Muleya, is honing her skills with Deloitte Consulting, a leading firm that offers business management services such as auditing, financial advisory, consulting and taxation. The company is one of the so-called Big Four global professional services giants, the other three being Ernst & Young, PricewaterhouseCoopers and KPMG. Deloitte Consulting ranks number one in the world, which elevates the stakes for Muleya and makes her arguably one of the most privileged yearly interns. In Zimbabwe, Muleya works with a Binga-based organization called Zubo Trust, where she oversees program monitoring and evaluation at community level. But now, she has the honor of assessing programs for the world's leading business consultancy, handling records for larger-than-life institutions such as the World Bank. And as anyone could imagine, the sudden upgrade brought its own challenges for Muleya. But she explains she was quick to adapt and rise to the occasion.
It was really indeed a challenge on me. But the way I approached it, I took that challenge and turned it into an opportunity. I told myself, I need to do this. I need to learn. So the more I read, the more I interacted with my project team, the more I even Googled more, the more I realized I'm able, I can do it.
Now enter David Chakombera, who is attached to the Overseas Private Investment Corporation, or OPIC, a U.S. federal government agency that works with the U.S. private sector, helping American businesses to establish and gain traction in emerging markets. Chakombera says his association with OPIC has helped him gain a lot of entrepreneurial perspective that he will be sharing with other startup business owners when he gets back in Harare.
I want to engage young entrepreneurs and just tell them about some of these organizations. Because I think also you'd appreciate if you do not know that these organizations exist, you may never be able to approach them for funding because you don't know that they exist. So first of all, it's creating an awareness. That's first. And then when you create an awareness, it's also to reach out to those candidates or young entrepreneurs who would essentially meet the requirements of OPIC.
The other two interns are 21-year-old IC entrepreneur Takunda Chingozo, who took President Obama to task over U.S. sanctions on Zimbabwe at the recent U.S.-Africa summit in Washington, as well as human rights lawyer Rumbizai Dube. The five are set to conclude their internships in 4 weeks' time. In Washington, I'm Tungamili Nkomo for VOA Studio 7.
Thank you, Ntunkamili. The Secretary General of the Zimbabwe Medical Association, Dr. Douglas Kwatidzo, says Zimbabwe's healthcare professionals are ready to deal with the deadly Ebola virus should an outbreak occur in the country. He tells Marvelous Mtlanganyahuye that the Ministry of Health and the World Health Organization have been holding extensive workshops to equip the health professionals in case of an outbreak.
The measures that have been put in place for people in the health service provision, that the most important is awareness that such a condition is there in the countries that are affected. That's the most important information that the health worker needs to know. Secondly, the health worker needs to know how that disease spreads, and that information has been distributed to as many health workers as possible, if not all the health workers in the country. And thirdly, health workers need to know how to handle any patients, including specimens, body fluids, that will be sent for testing in case somebody is affected by the Ebola virus. And fourthly, health workers need to know the kind of protective clothing or protective gear that can help them attend to patients who would have been affected. All that information has been made available to health workers. And not only that, there are kits that have been donated to the Ministry of Health from various players, including the World Health Organization. The Zimbabwe Medical Association itself has also donated kits to help those that will be handling patients with a suspected Ebola virus so that they don't get contaminated and in the process acquire the disease themselves.
So are you saying that Zimbabwe is ready at the moment when we look at the healthcare professionals should an outbreak occur in the country?
I am convinced that as far as the operators in Zimbabwe are concerned, I think the preparedness is there. Whether we've got the economic capacity or not, I think that's another issue.
That was the Secretary General Dr. Douglas Kwatidzo of the Zimbabwe Medical Association on the line from Harare with Studio 7's Marvelous Mtlanganyahuye. Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will discuss with you and the experts about the state of the economy.
Now to recap today's top stories.
Our critics say Central Bank Governor John Mangujiga's monetary statement alone will not revive the country's economy. They want Harare to put in place consistent policies that will attract investment.
Zimbabwe and China reportedly signed 9 deals that will see the Asian country providing financial support for Harare's economic turnaround strategy.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Sitandekile and Chris. This is Sandra Nyaira in Washington.
And I'm Sitandekile Mhlanga, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.